And our third speaker is Roberto Borrero, and he is the president of the United Confederation of Taino People, and he serves as the chairperson of the NGO Committee on the United Nations International Decade of the World's Indigenous Peoples. A longtime activist and historian, he's a former host and producer of Pacifica Radio's Circle of Red Nations on WBAI, and has also appeared on television and film. Mr. Borrero is currently the Indigenous and Native American Public Programs Coordinator at the American Museum of Natural History.
Bomatum, my relations, and Waitiao, we say, means you're very, very generous. In other words, sometimes when we translate our languages from wherever we come from, it may be hard to express them in other languages. So when we say Bomatum in my culture, it's more than just a thank you. It's a way of saying that, wow, this person, this individual is so generous for doing something, you know, for making a statement, for coming here together, for pulling us all together at this time. And so it goes beyond thank you. And I think that what my relatives were speaking about, this idea of people not understanding language is so very important. My ancestors were the very first people in this hemisphere to come across and encounter a gentleman by the name of Christopher Columbus. I know, according to the history that I was taught in school, one version of that story. I know another version of that story as related by my family and also our relations throughout the hemisphere, another perspective of that story about how we are at the point where we're all at today, not just Native people, but the world in general. And looking at that cycle over and over again, I have to agree with them. When are we going to really start to look at the history? It's there for all of us. I think one of the biggest problems was that they taught some of the Indians to read because they wrote all this stuff down and we can just pick it up. The international law, the way they express themselves, what's good for them, and I mean them, who's ever making the decisions, and what's good for us. And then when they do something, they're not applicable to the same laws that they just made up. And we see it over and over and over again. 500 years ago, we had a Taino cacique, or a chief, by the name of Warakuya. And he was one of the first people to bring the concerns of a community in contra to what was going on with this European imposition of power upon the people of the islands, in particular the island of Haiti, which is today known as República Dominicana, Dominican Republic, and Haiti. But Haiti is an original word, a Taino word, an Aboriginal word. And interestingly, when the uprising took place there, where the largely African descendant population rose and dispossessed the European colonizers, they chose to use the indigenous name of the island in honor of the indigenous people who were there before they were. One of the first acts that they did in that revolution was to pull down the statue of Columbus. It's a very powerful, powerful statement if we look at it from that perspective. So when we talk about language and when we talk about resistance, there's so many levels that we talk about. And we have, I mean, I'd like to be sitting out here and listening to Doc talk some more because I love listening to him speak and listening to these folks speak and Charlie Smoke and the gentleman Sean that was here last night. Man, I really learned a lot this weekend, and I'm going to be very, very grateful for that for the rest of the time I'm around. And I just have to keep remembering the hospitality that so many people have extended to me while I'm here, but not only while I'm here, as we go to visit other places, other indigenous places, other indigenous homelands, and we start to learn that we're all going through the same process, and it's happening over and over and over again. Like my brother said, when are we going to really realize it? How can we do it? You know, we're at a point in time where I've been so fortunate in my life to meet people like Dakajuwea, to meet people like Hopi Elder Thomas Binyanka, to meet other spiritual leaders, Orville Looking Horse of the Lakota people, people from down in the Maya homelands, Apolonario Pishtun, and these carriers of this sacred knowledge all throughout the hemisphere, and even some other places like Australia. And just listening to these folks talk over and over, I'm wondering why more people aren't getting the message, you know, if people are listening. And then just watching things as they occur this weekend, I said, you know, I think I mentioned this to Charlie Smoke earlier. It's like we're learning just to even talk to each other again. You know, we don't even know how to talk because we get all of our information. Like, what do? We're sitting down by the TV, right? And everything is there. We get our news from there. And a lot of people believe it. Or there's a general apathy. Like, people are just like in a smokescreen, in a fog. I don't know how to go like this or go, you know, to blow that fog away from them. I know how it blew away from me after listening to these folks and then understanding where I come from. And understanding the lessons that are there right now. But these are the same lessons that my ancestors that I speak so highly about also looked at the natural world. For example, we have a word in our language called huracan. That means the breath from the center. And you know it as hurricane. That means that even all this violence and turbulence going around, there's a calm place in the middle of it all. It's a very powerful teaching that my people had and that we can still have if we just look at it that way. For example, when the Spaniards came over, they tried to tell us that our understanding of huracan was that this huracan was our evil deity, our devil. Our culture never had a word for devil. And I think that's very profound. As I've traveled through every indigenous community and really got down to what they were saying, I don't know if anyone else had an equivalent for what that term of devil was. We may have had a term for the trickster, because obviously that's around, you know, it's a human condition. So we're aware of that, we have stories about that. But I don't think it means the same thing as evil, the way they were trying to tell us that it was. So understanding these things, understanding this idea of words and how we understand our way around us, this chief that I was talking about, Guaracuya, took his concerns with the understanding was, okay, here these people came in. They took over. They're killing our people over and over and over, just like these unbelievable visionaries that the Haudenosaunee keeps speaking of, who came up with the great law, or who came up with this idea of international solidarity, you know, who were professing these ideals, the same way that he was thinking about that. Well, how do I work with these people? Okay, I'll go to the courts. He took his case to the courts 500 years ago, and they ostracized him back then. In other words, as one of our relatives was saying, our South American brother, Aymara, Ivan, this morning, the system itself didn't work for him, even back then. But yet we're still trying and trying and trying to infiltrate this system and try to change that system like that using these laws. But then they keep on. What's the biggest statement that was made recently by George Bush and that administration? The international courts are a rogue court and no one should be following them. So in other words, there's no accountability then. If we can't even take our claims to an international court now because these are just a bunch of rogues, pirates, basically, is what he's trying to say, then where does it go? Where is the accountability for states' action against our people? Why do we have a situation like Chiapas still going on? Why do we have a situation like Vieques? My community there, indigenous or non-indigenous people, they've been suffering bombing for the last 60 years. And that little tiny, it's a little island. Beautiful place, one of the most beautiful places you're ever going to see. Beautiful land, beautiful water, but man, it is getting destroyed from year after year of military activities and maneuvers there. It's these same maneuvers that then they go out to other places and bomb other people. The same place where they try to say that this island, the use of this island, is for combat readiness. But what it really is to show off arms to sell them to other countries. The same countries that they then set up puppet regimes. And then a few years later, as in the case of Saddam Hussein, we say, oh, this guy's a rogue, a pirate. But these governments set them up. They sold them the arms after they tested them out in Vieques. And then after they don't have use for these guys, for whatever reason, and there could be a myriad of reasons, then we're presented with a new devil, a new dehumanizing force. And I think it's important, I don't know how many times, and it's not to denigrate people and their beliefs, but I can see over the years the pattern. And you talk about a two-row wampum. I can see the side-by-side pattern of aggressive military regime and an aggressive religious regime, which is, we call it Christianity. I don't know if the gentleman who came up with the concept, Christ himself, would be happy with the way that's being promoted today by many of his representatives. But from the very beginning, the colonization started and was sanctified by the church. And we have that document because I know how to read the Papal Bull of 1493 and subsequent documents after that. It was these same documents that were used in U.S. Supreme Court decisions to take over indigenous people's lands. It was this same doctrine that was the seed that was used to take over the indigenous peoples of the Pacific Islands, specifically Australia, New Zealand, where all other native peoples live. So there's a connection there. Why is it that so many times, I'm not saying that the churches haven't helped us or that there are individuals in the churches who have not helped us, because that would be disrespectful to say. And I don't come from a culture that disrespects people. Our foundation is based on the respect of all life. But what happens? We see it in the Amazon. We saw it in 1492. They send in the missionaries. They learn our language. Why? To translate the Bible into our languages, to feed us these concepts that are alien to what we've already established since time beginning. My concept of the world should be, if I had the proper education from when I was young, and I didn't have this other influence, should be that this beginning, the whole cycle of life, begins with the woman energy. What happens if I follow this thing? God is a man. He keeps saying, the Father, the Father, the Father, the Father, the Father. How many centuries have we pushed that into people? God is not the Father. You know, God is not the Mother, really. It's the combination, that energy. But the first energy takes that form of woman, because everything is birth, whether it's the sun, the moon. We know about it because we have those stories. We have that history. That science right now is actually sanctifying themselves in another type of religion, which is called science. Because we look to these people, we look to scientists as now the end-all, say-all. That's why we have anthropologists, archaeologists, and it's not to put down your choice, because we need people like you in these systems. I know I work in a museum, and I'm like shocked, you know, by the bureaucracy, which is, can just be compared to the United Nations, of old school anthropologists, old school people who keep presenting other people's cultures from their perspective, their religious perspective, and imposing what they feel on thousands and thousands of children a day who go to those museums, whose only contact with native people is what they see behind the glass case. And this has been going on for quite a number of years. So again, it's language, and there's different levels of engagement in this struggle. It's very important to make these connections. It's very important to see, really, that all this information, boy, I'm leaving this conference with a book right there that's about 650 pages of something that I can't wait to get into. You know, it'll keep me away from the TV. And it's going to tell me something very important, because that man right there has done many years of hard work. And whether people don't appreciate it or whether people start bad-mouthing him, they bad-mouth Jesus, right? They put him on the cross. I'm not saying that Doc is Jesus. Don't confuse my words, please. But even though he might have ordained me at some point, I don't know. But what I'm saying is that that's an important piece of information there, and I'm going to look forward to reading it. What we have in our situation, in my community, so many people didn't have access to information for so long a time. People were making estimates on Aboriginal populations in the Caribbean, in South America, and elsewhere. And many people weren't taking part in these censuses. You know, because whatever reason, they're afraid of the government. They don't know what these people really want. So why should they really classify or be counted in these things? But they use those statistics to write you in and out of history. One of the gentlemen today, Manuel, who gave the workshop today, talked about what Subcommander Marcos said. You know, it's the same pattern. Exploration, exploitation, and extermination. You see it over and over and over again. We see it in 1492, we see it today with what's going on in the Mideast. So it's not just indigenous people's struggle, and we can, as indigenous people, I don't think many people would be so misunderstanding if we said, ah, the heck with all of you people, we just want to work on ourselves. You know, we just want to work on our own community. But I think that even indigenous peoples, as far as I've seen it, they've continuously come together outside of their own communities. Yes, we work on our communities, but when you clean your house, not everyone's involved in cleaning your house. Someone's got to build the fence. Someone's got to go get the food. Someone's got to go outside the community and make contact with another community. We have the historical reference for that. I'm not saying that we as indigenous peoples have the answers for everything, but boy, we sure had things that worked. Everybody ate in our communities. We didn't have any psychiatrists. We didn't have the prison systems. Something had to be working there. And I think that if we use the resources that we have, these wonderful people that you have right here in your own community, just as the way I want to reach out and use the people, the resources that I have in my community, and access those resources. Not only access them, but support them. Support people like Dr. Chawia. Buy his book. Man, I think he deserves it. You know, support other leaders in the area. We have a tendency of pushing people out to speak. But then when it comes down to it, we don't back up these people when they're out there and they're getting arrested. I mean, the situation in Oneida is a prime example of that. People are talking about a system. But here, this woman, the bottom line is, I got an email from somebody because they knew I was going to go out there to Oneida. And this gentleman is an editor for Indian Country Today. And he told me I shouldn't be going to Oneida because that is a family dispute. And I said, and? You know, aren't we part of the family? You know? Like, why wouldn't I investigate that? The bottom line is that there's a woman there with children who lives in a trailer, who's getting oppressed by somebody who has a really nice house and a lot of money. And look how that woman lives, and look how this guy lives. I think it's easy to make the choice about, you know, who's being oppressed. We can see it. It's right in front of us. I mean, you just can't get around it. If they're making money from that casino, why doesn't everybody have a nice house on that place? I don't know the semantics of that. I'm not an economist, but I would think that if they're making millions and millions and millions of dollars, that should be somehow distributed to the people who it was supposed to benefit. Maybe I'm not right, I don't know. I'm not saying that I know everything because I've sat with many people, elders, who constantly say, and I'm blown away by what they say. And they say, well, you know, but I don't really know. These elders always say that. And you're looking at people, you're saying, God, you know, boy, I wish I had half this much when I get to that age. And they're like, but, you know, I don't really know. You know, I'm not, you know, very humble, right? I see, you see it and you're just like, holy smokes, you know. Amazing how people are. But I think that also talks about our dignity. And I think that's the last point that I want to make, that there's a way. I've heard and sat in been fortunate to sit in some of the workshops, and there's a way that people present as indigenous peoples that I've seen again from time and time again. I think of Rigoberta Menchú, who's a Guatemalan Maya woman who won the Nobel Peace Prize. And think of the horrors that she and her people had to go through in Guatemala. But you think that with her knowledge and what happened to her, that she might be arrogant about her presentations or angry in her presentation. But every time that I've seen her speak, she's done a really good job of maintaining a dignity about her. And I think that that's something that also as activists, that we can't just go to be just for the fight, you know, like some people smell blood and they like to get, we see that in animals, you know, they smell the blood and they like to just get in there and they go crazy. But we also have to know that if we're talking about indigenous people's cultures, I've heard it here before that we consult with the communities, we understand the communities as best we can and understand what they need and what they need from us. Not just go out there because of the repercussions. You don't know once you leave, if you're not deciding to stay there with them, if you weren't invited to stay with them, once you leave, what's going to happen to those people? So are you going to follow up with that? Or are you just going to be a one-hit wonder? Like we had, you know, all these songs, right? The one-hit wonders, and you never hear from these artists again. You know? So maintain the dignity in people. Think about the documents that you can use, you know, to keep on bringing it up. I don't know if we're gonna change the system. You know, I don't know what the answer is, but I know that if we keep meeting like this, talking to people, understanding where people are coming from, and not promoting a cycle of aggression in that way in our minds also. Yes, we have to fight sometimes, but we can be above that. You know, we can have a level above it to go beyond it and really make a difference in this world. Because if you make somebody smile, we've made people smile here, boy, that's better than making somebody miserable, you know, every day. You know, help your friends out, you know. Help these people out, these local leaders, support them, get them around, get them more speaking engagements. Get a video camera, get another TV station. These are all things that we can do to keep pumping this message, to get it across to everybody else, to see that their issues, my issues, your issues, they're all one issue. You know, we're talking about the liberation of Mother Earth, and hence we're talking about the liberation of ourselves. So with that, Bomatum, my relations, thank you very much.